Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Angela Alberti.
Welcome, Ivy Podcast listeners. I am your host for today's podcast episode, Angela Alberti. Very happy to be here, as I am with every episode I get to share with you guys. Before we get started on today's show, I wanted to just give a quick reminder to all of our listeners to rate us. Hop into your app store, give us some feedback, give us a review, give us some stars, really let us know what you think. We love to hear that feedback, and it also helps us get in front of more listeners like yourself. So without further ado, I would like to introduce Robin Walters, who is the person I have the privilege of interviewing in today's episode. Robin, give us a little bit of a rundown on yourself.
Hi, everybody. My name's Robin Walters. I am the owner CEO of Rogue Recruitment here in Tulsa. We call ourselves the anti-staffing staffing company, trying to shake up the broken industry. And we primarily do IT placement.
Oh, awesome. I love that. The anti-staffing staffing company. Definitely going to ask you some questions, but this episode is perfect for that person that just found themselves within the staffing space, that client that maybe needs that IT help, which basically is every single client on the face of the earth right now. And also, you know, maybe somebody that is in the staffing and recruiting space that recently has gone independent or is at the big agency and thinking about making a move. And those are some of the topics that we're going to be covering in today's episode. Robin, we've had the chance to catch up and get to know each other a little bit better as we lead up into today's episode. So I'm really excited to have the opportunity to sit with you and talk to you. I've listened to some of your other podcasts, and I love the way that you keep it real, and you're very transparent in your approach and how you led up to starting Rogue Recruitment and really establishing yourself as the anti-staffing staffing agency. So talk to us a little bit about the road, I guess you could say, that has led you here.
Right after college, I got stuck into doing one of those 100% commission jobs where I was going door to door selling office supplies.
Right.
And that was horrifying. But the good thing about that is after that's nothing scary, right? So I got connected with a recruiter, and I had never considered recruiting before. And I think most folks can agree with that it's something that you just fall into.
Yeah,
you know, you don't go to college to be a recruiter.
Oh my gosh, 100%.
And so I started working with a management consulting firm down in the Dallas area. And the beautiful thing about that was I was raised to believe that recruitment was about relationships and really look at the bigger impact of what you're doing. Take care of the people that you're working with. And so when I moved to Tulsa and transferred into the typical staffing model, it was a complete culture shock to see recruitment go from, hey, what's their story, to how can we make money off of them?
Right.
And it never set right with me. I was very successful working with a major staffing company here in town, but it also started to bother me of, why am I successful? What does that say about me that I'm doing so well? And it got to a point where I just knew, hey, there has to be a better way that feels more authentic and genuine to how I want to approach recruitment. So I looked around town and I started looking at other companies here. I was like, hey, if I'm not working where I'm at, where do I want to go? And none of the local places really checked that box. And so then I was like, well, I guess I'm going to have to start my own firm. And from the beginning, you know, we've been this bright red logo, go rogue, the idea of let's really shake things up here in town. You know, the market is so saturated with staffing companies, I didn't see a point in starting just another firm when we could do something very different. And by being very different, it's just really simple in terms of just caring and understanding the responsibility it is when you're helping somebody get a new job and truly putting candidates' needs first above, you know, the client who's paying you, which isn't exactly something that's taught in the typical environment. And so Rogue got started a little over 3 years ago, and we've been running with our hair on fire ever since.
In true entrepreneurial style, it has been 0 to 100. I love your story. I like how you at the beginning started with the scariest thing in the world, which is B2B door-to-door sales of office supplies, and how that's led you to where you are right now. And also mentioning the fact that this is an industry that finds you. I think I've said that in so many of these podcast episodes, because it truly is, which can sometimes lead to the notoriety that carries with staffing and recruiting, because it is such an easy entry point for so many people that you get lost in the shuffle. And because it's so competitive out there, I mean, it's a highly competitive industry. It becomes very bottom line profitability. What is it that we are making every single hour? So you found something different and you started Rogue, and I commend you. And as a fellow female co-founder of a company right now, I know exactly what you're going through on some of these things. So that's exactly the lesson that I've learned in the past couple of months. And I'd love to pick your brain on how has it been for you being that female entrepreneur? And if we have somebody listening into today's podcast that is either thinking about going into their own business as a female, as a minority owned business, as somebody that just doesn't know really what it's going to be about, what would be that advice or that experience that you could share with them on how that's been?
For me, I felt like I had to put my life on hold. Mm-hmm. And especially being a female founder, that's, I mean, in terms of having kids, you know, how could I give my all to a kid if I'm also having to give 100% to my business? So when I started my company, my now husband and I had recently started dating, and we ended it. And I didn't talk to him for a few months because my focus was so singular mm-hmm. on my business. Mm-hmm. And as I started to get through that, I realized how much I missed him, right? Mm-hmm. So fast forward to today, we got married. I'm 22 weeks pregnant. And the reason I'm able to do that is because you have to set those very clear boundaries. Mm-hmm. It's okay that your business is going to be a primary focus for you, but you have to set, hey, but between this and this time, I am fully disconnected from work and I can commit that to my friends, my family, my relationship. But on other times, you need to have a very understanding partner who gets like, hey, this is just the season of your life.
Right.
And I did not set those boundaries on myself when I first got things started. And not only did that lead to me feeling like I had to put my life on hold, it also led to some pretty severe mental health struggles. So yes, it is. There are different challenges that you face as a female entrepreneur. A male entrepreneur having their first kids is much less disruptive than it is to the female. Not only are you having to birth the thing, but just the hormones. You know, first trimester is hell. There's only so much you can give. And understand that and forgive yourself that you're going to need to take the time and take care of yourself.
100%. Wow, that's some great advice. I feel like I could have listened to that a few months ago. As a fellow female co-founder that is 21 weeks pregnant, we've got a lot in common on today's episodes, but it is so true. It's just a different level of sacrifice, I think, out there for women.
And it's also that understanding that it doesn't make you less of a founder. In fact, I think it having different priorities is really good for your business. And since my business is no longer my top priority, it gives it a chance to actually grow beyond me and in a healthy mm-hmm. way, instead of, hey, this only lasts as long as I can work 80 hours a week.
Wow. That's powerful. So very true. 100% true. And I am glad that we get to have this dialogue today. I hope that somebody that's a female that's listening in can take that and stride with it. But somebody specifically within staffing and recruiting, any advice that you would give them as they're going out on their own? Get ready.
I would kind of circle back to something I said earlier. There is no point in starting just another staffing agency. Mm. You have to figure out, what are you going to do that's going to be dramatically different in an offering for your candidates, your clients, your employees? Mm-hmm. Knowing that you can make money in staffing is not reason enough to start a staffing company. Mm-hmm. If that's your primary motivation, then like, please get out of the industry and do something else.
That's very true. And considering how saturated, you know, how many competitors do you guys have in a 20-mile radius? I bet there's dozens of them out mm-hmm. there, the big guys, the smaller guys, the work from home recruiters. So it's highly saturated, and you don't have to have that differentiator from the get-go. So that's some fantastic advice. But just to add to this, and you mentioned it earlier, I mean, you suddenly found yourself at a major agency, probably one of the bigger ones out there. And you realized it was all about, you know, the money. But why Ellis, or is there anything else that you would like to add on to that, that you feel has somewhat gained this notoriety with recruiters and staffers in general for the industry as a whole?
It's very easy to take that easy road and try and make the quick buck. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily the recruiter's fault. It's the pressure they're getting from those big companies, where you have out-of-state shareholders who, you know, can't even point out your city on a map. But the only way they can understand what you're doing is looking at those quantifiable numbers mm-hmm. instead of what impact are you making on your community? How do your candidates feel working with you? And understanding that. And so when you get a lot of these junior recruiters, a lot of them fresh out of school, and this insane pressure to hit these daily, weekly metrics, then it's not their fault. That's how they're trained to view the industry. And it starts from just the companies caring more about money than the impact they're making.
Or their own recruiters and staff.
Exactly. We have a firm here in Tulsa that, at the start of the pandemic, they're a global staffing agency. They did massive layoffs worldwide. Then a couple months later, they closed their Tulsa office and fired their entire team. They had people who had been on their team for almost 10 years. You know, good recruiters, good people. And it's not their fault that they were working with a company who didn't give a damn about them.
Right.
And just the impact that has on the community of, you know, them pulling out their investment. All of a sudden, these good employees, unemployed and scrambling to try and figure out how to work with their family. That's not what staffing should be, but those were decisions based on numbers that I'm sure made a lot of sense to the shareholders.
Mm-hmm. But impacted a lot of lives around, mm-hmm. around the way. That's super powerful what you've mentioned. And I think you are spot on. I think that's exactly what happens. And sometimes, you know, I've said it before, but it's a shame to see what certain people or just general talent out there thinks of a recruiter calling them and how to carry that stigma and turn it around into something else. What are some of the ideas or the trends that you see, just kind of taking it to the other side, that excite you, that you guys implement into your organization, that are the differentiators, or even with the industry as a whole, trending things that you think are really transforming the industry?
It excites me how much of an impact our small, scrappy team has had in Tulsa. And that seems like a self-serving answer, but the reality of that is people are ready for the relationship part to be bought back to recruitment. People are frustrated and disenfranchised with a staffing agency. I hate it when somebody calls me a headhunter. Like, I'm not a headhunter. I'm here, like, mm-hmm. on your side, advocating for you, trying to give you some options. And what excites me about that is the impact we've made in Tulsa and the clients that have been coming to us. Like, we haven't done really any cold calling whatsoever. It's 98% just been people coming in or referrals, which is incredible, especially for a new company. But that tells me the industry is ready to be, you know, shaken up. And to anyone listening, we're shaking up Tulsa, but there are a hell of a lot of other places that are ready for you to do things differently.
Absolutely.
And so as you talk about AI and automation that's coming into the industry, that's exciting in the sense that it can help you be connected with more folks to make more of an impact. Mm-hmm. But once you get to, like, it's a numbers game until you get actually connected with somebody. And then it needs to be about that person, that individual, their hopes, dreams, fears, everything that they want and need out of their next job. And mm-hmm. I think people are ready for that shift in recruitment. Mm-hmm. And you know, especially after this pandemic, people understand the power of their choice mm-hmm. a lot more.
Oh, and yeah.
When you
it's totally candidate driven right now, right?
Exactly. And when you choose to support companies, you're choosing to support their mission, their vision, their values. And I think the pandemic did a great job at showing companies, or companies showing their true colors and their values and what's important to them, both good or bad. And so I'm hoping people will use their choice to help make change, because that change is going to come from the consumers.
Right. And what you said is powerful. AI and automation is a very exciting thing. At the end of the day, hopefully it'll help leverage that door that opens up the relationship. But at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to, is the relationship and the human element going back into this industry, which has lost sight of it in so many different ways. And perfect segue into my next question, future of work. We hear a lot about that. We hear a lot about what that means to people. What does it mean to you?
I see a vision where companies care about their employees and the impact they're making on their community. There's a lot more flexibility. I mean, we've proven that you don't need to be in the office all the time. Now, some people do, but there's also a lot of people who can be very productive working from home. Ideally, that means people will get to explore more, travel more, live in different cities. Companies who prioritize mental health and see it as just a big deal as if somebody has diabetes or some other physical health problem. And that vision excites me so much, and it's the reason why I run my company the way that I do. I mean, for example, my husband's going to have to take unpaid paternity time off, and we're going to make it work. I'm very thankful that he's able to take time off in the first place, but still, that sucks, right? The standard, the standard for, you know, paternity leave, let alone maternity leave in the country, is like really behind in other countries.
And the struggle to scramble and find, you know, budgets around that during what is a very special time. It's just pretty, pretty crazy to see how antiquated this country can be in that regard.
Exactly. And I can't control that my husband has to do that, but I do have control over one of my employees is having his third kid in October. Hell yeah, he's getting unpaid. He's getting fully paid, fully disconnected time off, because that is something that I can control. So, you know, sometimes this means I get burned in the choices that I make, but by treating our employees as like the people above what they're bringing into the business is a way that I can sleep at night. And it's a way that feels authentic and genuine to my soul.
That's awesome. Your answer was very much entrepreneurial focused. It was the impact that the company can have and how employers are going to start looking to hopefully be more of a positive impact. And it's so spot on. It's also a matter of survivability, considering how candidate driven everything is right now and where we stand in the state of so many different employees and workers across the country reevaluating what is important to them and finding purpose within their own working life after the pandemic, coupled with generational impacts. Millennials, Gen Zers are now the majority of the workforce. And they really care about things a lot differently than the generations before them, the Gen X and the boomers. Things like, what is a company's social stand on certain issues? What are they going to be doing for my mental health? What am I going to be doing to feel like I have and am providing a purpose? They look at some of those things more so important than health insurance sometimes. So it is a vastly different generational impact that we're headed into as well.
In 2019, I was at a conference, the Qualtrics conference, and President Obama was speaking. And that was something he was warning that, hey, this next generation, they care about your company's values. That's what they're going to be looking at, not necessarily just your product. And he was given that heads up. And I mean, it's 100% correct. And that's also why my business is doing successful, or, you know, being successful, is because we do have those values that we wear on our sleeve. And hey, we're not for everybody, and that's okay.
Yeah. And I want to touch in on something that you mentioned earlier, and that's the valuation that a company can actually have on mental health. And how do you think that can really be a positive tool, even in some respect, on retention, on a company's retention strategy for talent?
the lens that I view this on is I am a very good recruiter. And if I were working at the company, the corporate company I was at early last year when I had a bit of a mental health breakdown and needed to take some time off, I would have been fired. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean I'm not somebody worth investing in, right? And there's, I mean, once again, I think it's going to start with those small companies and not just saying, hey, you can take a mental health care day, but the leaders communicating when they're taking their mental health care mm-hmm. days. So for example, yesterday I was just this cesspool of anxiety and I felt mm-hmm. like I was leading towards a panic attack and I just had to go home and I didn't lie to my team. I just said, hey, I know this is bad timing, but I got to take the day. I'm having a lot of anxiety and I'm not getting enough work done to justify trying. And I mean, depression is a debilitating illness. And when you try and hide it and fight through it, it makes it so much worse. And I used to think that as a leader, I had to hide my struggles because I didn't want my team to think I was weak. You know, I was thinking, hey, why would anybody want to follow me if they don't think I'm mentally fit for this? But then what actually happened is when I got to a point and I opened up needing support, my team was amazing. They understood, they had trust that I would get back. They turned from people I was trying to hide things from to very important parts of my support system to get to the point of recovery where I'm at right now. And it starts with vulnerability mm-hmm. and leading from the top. I don't think it's reasonable to expect your employees to be the ones to change things or be vulnerable first. I think that has to start with you as the leader being vulnerable and showing that it's okay. And when you also have to follow through, when you have an employee who's having a rough time, dude, take the day. Let me know if you need more time. You don't have to tell me what's going on. You can just say it's a personal day and that's totally fine. But I'm here if you do want to talk. Mm-hmm. And when like our employees start to talk about some things they're struggling with, you know, I'll share, oh, when I was going through this, this is what really helped me. Mm-hmm. And we'll just have those really open conversations where it's truly a safe space. We had our employees a couple of months ago, they described being at our office as being in a sanctuary. Like it was a sanctuary, a safe place from everything else, which when you compare that to the typical staffing competitive environment, it's amazing. And neither of them have ever been in the staffing environment before. So they don't really understand like how incredible that was their statement and how much that meant to me to hear that.
That's very powerful. And it's very true. It all starts with vulnerability and being the leader that decides to show that you are vulnerable, not the one that, you know, and I know you're going to think of a few of them off the top of your head that stays until 7 p.m. and is there at 7 a.m. and grinds through the midnight oil every single day and is perfectly capable of doing so because, I don't know, having that humility to say that you can be that type of leader is what sends shockwaves into a culture that makes it acceptable for your own staff there in turn. So what an amazing compliment that you received, and it's not easy to get to, especially in the amount of time that you guys have been open. So kudos to you guys. Now, one of the things that we often hear about actually lately, you may have heard about it, is this war on retention, the war of, you know, not only attracting talent, but retaining talent, considering the amount of resignations that are happening across the country right now. You guys focusing primarily on direct hire, right? So you guys have to look at this beyond the lens of a staffing arrangement where it is a fixated amount of time, 9 months in, 9 weeks in, what have you, then they're out. It really is more of a matching service so that they can hopefully retain that. So what is your thought and view on the war on retention? What have we gotten to get here? And what do you guys do to help your clients hopefully beat that as well?
Folks are no longer just grateful to have a job and going to stick at a job just for the sake of, hey, they're employed.
Right.
And that's why this is all starting, which I think is exciting because employees are starting to demand better. Mm-hmm. So The bad news, if you were one of those companies that did not take care of your people, you have a hell of an uphill battle right now. Because you can't, you did layoffs, you forced people to come into the office when it wasn't safe. If you were one of those companies, people remember. And they're going to be looking for a new job at a company who cares about them and treated their employees well. Right. And I mean, that's just the truth of it, right? But if you want to know how to attract and retain top talent, ask the talent what's important to them. Ask your employees, hey, we're coming up with, you know, we're looking at redoing our benefits. What's most important to you and your families? Mm-hmm. And let them tell you instead of coming up with some grand strategy that's completely disconnected from your team. Ask your team what they want. Ask them their goals. What would they like to see? When you're talking with candidates, hey, what's most important to you outside of salary? Is it time off? Is it the flexibility to work from home?
Help
is
with
it
child
professional
care?
Training? Yeah, child care. I mean, there's so many options beyond that. And a lot of times people at the top get really disconnected because they're not actually talking to the folks that these impact or these decisions dramatically impact. And I mean, with our clients, the cool thing is, and I know a lot of staff and agencies are going to say that, but like we say this, but we genuinely just have really awesome clients who take care of their people. Mm-hmm. We're highly selective in the clients that we work with because, like I said, it starts with what's best for our candidates. And it's so far reaching for that candidate if they get a new job that the difference between a job that they're unsatisfied in versus one where they're thriving, it's incredible. And that absolutely impacts their personal life. So we work, like our clients are good. They take care of their people. We talk to them about, hey, yeah, this is salary's important, but hey, these are some other things that he's looking for. Where are you able to give? And have a human conversation together to see what's going to make sense. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that involves, you know, as the staffing company, just getting out of the way. Hey, you two talk, like keep us in the loop, but we don't need to be controlling this process.
Right, right. That's awesome. It all sounds like a lot of this is going to be dictated by the worker. It really is going to be the age of the worker and what is going to help thrive and implement potentially new retention strategies for employers out there, aligned with some future of work things that we've noticed, like having some hybrid work model, being able to take time off, putting mental health right up there with your regular health insurance benefits packages. These are all nuances. So if anyone has been listening in on this episode for the last, I don't know, 30 minutes, then you picked up on some really good retention strategies as a whole, you know, just stemming off of what Robin is mentioning in this last question. So as we're wrapping up today's episode, Robin, I'd love to just kind of get some feedback from you. What are you listening to in terms of a content diet? What is your source of inspiration? And how do you stay up to date on what's happening within your realm of things?
Yeah, a big thing to start is I surround myself with people who are going to challenge me. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's an aggressive challenge, but even if they agree with me, try and pick holes on it, make me really think through. And I think everyone listening, no matter what stage of life you're in, where you're at professionally, you need people around you who will challenge you. And secondly, you know, I'll read a lot of books, although I have to admit I have, I think, about 20 or so in my back burner that I just keep, I keep ordering books and then I don't have as much time.
I'm so guilty of it. I have one on my desk right now that I ordered last week. I haven't even opened up.
Yeah, I have a good friend I was talking to about some, who's one of those that'll challenge me. And he's like, hey, you got to read this book based on some things you've been saying. Okay, ordered. But yeah, it's been on my dining room table for a few days and I haven't touched it yet. And then I'll also, depending on, I mean, Audible is also really good to get those books when you're doing a lot of hikes and movement. But lately I have like a 8-minute commute, not getting out as much. So reading is a big one.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, any closing remarks as we're wrapping up today's episode? And finally, let us know how we can get a hold of you guys. Also, shout out to y'all's LinkedIn page and whoever administers that. You guys throw some really nice content out there. I started following y'all a couple of weeks ago, so I like what I've been seeing online. But what's the best way to get a hold of you? And anything you'd like to wrap up today's session with?
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn, Robin Walters, Find Rogue Recruitment. I'm on social. I mean, I'm really everywhere. my last name used to be Burkstresser, so it was a little bit easier to find me, but I think Walters is still good enough. Or you can just do robin@roguerecruitment.com, and I'm there. And just in parting, I would say choosing the hardest route or path isn't the thing that's going to make you strong. So don't feel like you have to go things alone. Find your support system, lean on them, and just take care of yourself, set healthy boundaries, big point there. And if nobody's ever going to bet on you like you will on yourself, so take that leap, but have a support system. Don't think you have to do it all alone.
There's so many things of what you just said that resonated with my mom and everything she's told me. So shout out to mom, because I just thought of you and what you just said. That was awesome. And that's some awesome advice that can really transcend to beyond the entrepreneur, but so many people at so many different levels. But thank you to Robin Walters for joining us today. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in. We will catch you guys on the next Ivy podcast episode.
Thank you so much, Angela. It's been fun talking to you.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.